The Rob Brown Show, back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate, Rob Brown, the Great Milonzo, and you be a part of the show. 844-326-3663. That is the phone number. That is the Hub City Spartanburger text line. 844-326-3663. The AP Top 25 College Football Poll is out. Coming up here in just a few minutes from right now, we are going to look at the Top 25. We are going to make our preseason prognostications. Who's too high? Who's too low? Who's going to finish higher than they start? Lower than they start? Around where they start? Etc., etc., etc. And have a little fun with that discussion. I had a thought that I wanted to get to as well about the Clemson-LSU game that I think Clemson fans may be interested in because it does involve you directly and specifically. We're going to get to that coming up later on in this hour. Plus, I want to talk a little National Football League because yesterday I heard a take that I wanted to get to. And we will get to that take coming up a little bit later on in the show. It is about the rookie quarterbacks across the league.
Thank you. I was going to say, that's not a very good tease. You're just, we're going to get to a thing. What is the thing?
A take, man. A take.
Okay.
Got to have a take. All have right. A take. Don't suck. All right. But it is 8 o'clock. That means it is time for the Audio Blitz. I almost called it the wrong thing there. The Audio Blitz. Probably forget the names of important things, people, and places in my life, if I had to guess. That's why I ended up with Bobby's Chicken Shack a minute ago, because I could not think of the name of another restaurant in the heat of the moment, so it was easier for me to make one up.
Well, it's better. That way you don't give free publicity to, you know, restaurants without them paying for a sponsorship.
By the way, same guy that owns Bob's Used Cars. He went with more colloquial Bobby. Because it gives you that friendly vibe.
He's also,
Bob, very professional. Yeah. Bobby, much more down-to-earth, home-cooking kind of guy.
All the NIL deals he's given out is starting to pay off, so he's able to, you know, expand his empire.
Ain't no doubt. All right, let's get to the Audio Blitz, some of the best audio that we have picked up over the past 24 hours. I'm going to start with this one. College football, we mentioned on the way out there. Kind of a religion across the South to some degree. And the further you get into the Deep South, the more ingrained that belief becomes. And then there's this very special place. That special place is called Alabama. Now, I don't know how many of you have been to Alabama. There are some places in Alabama that are absolutely beautiful with a capital B-E-A, beautiful, in no doubt. And then there are places in Alabama that don't go there for a variety of reasons. How dedicated are they to their college football? Keeping in mind, Alabama, no professional sports in Alabama. In fact, pretty far away is most of the state from professional sports. There's a good Braves following there. You'll find the occasional Atlanta Falcons fan. But by and large, Alabama is not a place with much in the way to connections of professional sports. You'll find some Saints fans scattered around, but it's Alabama. And it's Auburn most of the time, which is why I found this story of a young lady as told by AL.com. I found it feelings inducing, though which feelings I haven't quite landed on yet. The young lady's name is Crimson Ann White.
Okay, so it's Ann, not Ann.
Right.
I was worried that, you know, maybe her middle name was Ann.
Crimson with a K, Ann, A-N-N-E, White. You may very well know that when the Alabama Crimson Tide describe themselves to people, they refer to themselves as the Crimson and White. Her parents straight up called her Crimson Ann White. That was her actual legal name. I even had my moment of Lonzoism where I went, there's no way, that's not real, that can't be real. No parent, no matter how dedicated you are to the University of Alabama or any other university of blank, you're not naming your kid Crimson and White.
By the way,
then I went and looked it up. Turns out, nope, she is documented well throughout her lifetime. Her name before she got married was Crimson Ann White.
I don't doubt names. I never doubt when someone tells me, it's like, yeah, parents do stuff like that. It's just there. I used to know a guy who worked there. He's no longer with us. His first name was Clemson. So, I mean, it does happen for sure.
You know, crimson and white, to some degree, I can understand. Maybe not the first name Crimson with a K on the front of it. Naming a kid Clemson, like that's his name, that's his legal.
That was
on
his name.
Driver's license,
yeah,
first name.
That was his name, yes.
I got nothing. I got nothing.
He didn't go by that name. And I just happened to see full names because of my job. And there it was.
There are times that I remind myself, you know what, I love college football.
By the way, he was a Clemson fan too, so that worked out. Because if he wasn't, that would have been a problem, probably.
There are times that I remember, you know, I think to myself, I love college football. But then I hear stories like that, and I'm like, I don't think I love college football, guys. I think I just like college football. I think I have like a platonic relationship with college football. I don't think I have that like passionate, deep, lusty love with college football like someone who would name their kid Crimson and White. That is a level of dedication. The best part about that story, and the story was too long. Unfortunately, I couldn't clip the whole thing because we'd have been here for like 6 minutes listening to it. But she went on to say that when she graduated high school, the particular major that she wanted to pursue was in a subject that the University of Auburn University is nationally known, recognized, and renowned for. And so when she came out of high school, Crimson and White, who was not yet married and was still going legally by the name Crimson and White, applied to go to Auburn. She was going to go be a War Eagle Tiger. I'm going to guess that would have ruined Thanksgiving. Had she come home and said, Mom, Dad, War Eagle, and they would have said Crimson and White, get the hell out.
That's, you know, daughters tend to be rebellious, so that would have been funny if she did that.
That's fantastic. Hey, you know, we talked about Jimmy Buffett earlier in the show. Hey, this is completely unsports related, and I don't care. We talked about Jimmy Buffett actually yesterday on the show.
I think that was yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday, but, on the show. Time's okay. A flat circle, everything's a blur. We talked about Jimmy Buffett. Jimmy Buffett has a song. I actually accidentally, because I forgot that I did not go to break on the stream, sang a song yesterday called Boat Drinks by Jimmy Buffett. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. Subject matter is, guy sitting.
He's not ashamed of his voice. He doesn't care that he sang it on the stream.
No, not really.
He just wants you to go back and look at the stream and watch him sing.
No, no, don't give away the secrets, man. It's called engagement farming. All right?
Is that like aura farming? Or is it?
No, engagement farming is something that we track and get paid for. So it's much
okay.
More important.
All right. Now for a word from our sponsor.
Jimmy Buffett sang a song called Boat Drinks. The song is written and sung from the perspective of a guy trapped in a cold weather environment and how much he wants to go back to somewhere that it's warm and drink some boat drinks. Well, Mac McAnally, very famous singer-songwriter who spent years and years and years writing with, touring with, performing with Jimmy Buffett, told the story about that song. Jimmy Buffett is outlaw country, but he replaced whiskey with rum. He replaced the desert with an island. He replaced the saddle with a hammock. And there is a reason to this very day that Rob Brown will tell you that my favorite singer-songwriter of all time is Jimmy Buffett. Because when I retire, fingers crossed, there is nothing I want to do more than own a house somewhere in the Caribbean that nobody knows where it is. And I got a hammock. And I got a cooler that is the size of a guest house full of rum. And I got my wife, a dog, the beach, and a TV, and not a damn thing else.
All right. I am curious. Was he Jimmy Buffett when he did it? I mean, was he that guy? I mean, was he famous? Did he already have hit songs? Or was this just some aspiring artist who actually had the pocket money to go and go, I'm going to go to the Caribbean?
Well, first off, obviously, plane tickets used to be a hell of a lot cheaper. But here's the take I have in response to that. That story's cool as hell, whether he was famous or not, right?
No, it's an awesome story, but I just believe his fame may have stopped him from getting arrested.
Guy straight up steal, and I'm going to, for the record, because I love it, I'm going to work under the assumption that every word that Mac McAnally just told about Jimmy Buffett is 1,000% true. In my head, that story is gospel truth in the book of Buffett, and I subscribe to it.
What was the name of that song again?
Boat Drinks. Visitors scored on the home rink, or everything seems to be wrong.
Listen, I'm not going to apologize for not knowing a lot of Jimmy Buffett songs. I do know Wasted Away, but here's the thing. All the stuff he sings about is stuff I've never done or never will do. So it doesn't appeal to me.
Stuff I grew up with and around. That's why it does to me. Okay, let's hope
you didn't grow up drinking boat drinks.
But this morning, I shot 6 holes in my freezer. I think I've got cabin fever.
Okay, you're singing the song.
Yeah,
okay.
Correct. Love some Buffett. Love that story. Love that from Mac McAnally. Good take. Appreciate it. Love to hear it. Hey, we have finally got our first response from Xavier Legette. Xavier Legette got tossed from preseason game number 1. Against the Cleveland Browns because he got into fisticuffs with the defensive back for the Cleveland Browns. They both hit the showers, kids. And we talked about it quite a bit yesterday. Really disappointing because this is the offseason that I very much need Xavier Legette to prove that he's the dude. Why? Because I want him around forever. He's my favorite NFL player, and I got to keep it a buck. I thought about this a lot yesterday after I heard this clip. Xavier Legette legitimately might already be one of my favorite 4 NFL players of all time. Like, realistically. Like, might be one of my favorite 4 NFL players of all time. Not just because of what he's done or not done on the football field, but just as a dude. But in that moment, kind of a weak spot for a dude. I need you to prove you deserve to be on the field. I need you to prove you're number 2. What I don't need you to do is get out there, allow a DB to insult Dollar Bill and start throwing hands. Well, it came out after the game and before practice yesterday that XL spent a little time this offseason getting his cardio up. Spent a little time getting the old strength and stamina up. And how did he do it? Professional boxing lessons. He was taking boxing over the summer to get the cardio up. Now, somebody who, back when I was a younger and more formidable man, did that for a couple of summers. I took boxing lessons. I took boxing from Roy Jones Jr., greatest pound for pounder of all time. I didn't do it because I ever thought I was going to use it in an actual fight. Thought, man, it'd be nice to have it in the back pocket if I do. But I did it because I wanted to get in shape. I wanted to build some confidence. I wanted to get the cardio up. I wanted to get my fat behind back into shape. But I will tell you that after I was done with those lessons, yeah, I felt a lot better about myself, felt a lot more confidence. I didn't go in and go, well, if there's a fight, I got to talk out of it. I went in going, there's not going to be a fight, and if there is, I'll end it, because I felt real good about myself. So Xavier Legette at practice yesterday got asked, hey, man, did those boxing lessons, is that maybe what triggered you to throw some haymakers at a dude wearing a helmet?
Probably shouldn't be laughing about it. He probably shouldn't be. I'm just saying, laugh on the inside.
So, I'm a human being. I think most of us are.
I don't know.
Lonzo doubts that sometimes.
I still suspect, yeah.
I'm a human being. And I'm going to tell you. And I think most of you that are in similar spots will understand what I'm saying here. There are things that, for instance, my wife can do or say to me. There are things that say, for instance, my little nephew can say or do to me that I go, God, you're so cute. That if any of you did it to me, I'd punch you in the face. You understand? There are things that my little nephew and my wife can say to me or do to me that if you did it, I would fight you. If my wife walks over when I'm halfway through a nap and tickles the bottom of my feet because she knows it's going to jolt me awake like I just did a Scarface amount of cocaine in the AM, I'm going to wake up and go, oh, it's a good thing I think you're pretty. But if you did it to me, I'm going to wake up and go, I hope you're ready to meet your maker because you're about to.
And why are you in Rob's house and he's asleep? I don't know.
That's also a fair point. Point is, when they do it, I go, I forgive you because I love you and you're adorable. I don't want to be that guy with XL, but I can't help it, man. I heard that and I'm like, all right, I kind of get it. And like, maybe it's a little personal to me because, again, took boxing lessons, sparred a little bit. Like, not anything that I would say I am capable of defending myself in a fight. I don't know if I am. I still try to talk myself out of it.
The follow-up question should have been, where do you wind it? Because he took it for cardio. He threw some punches out there. He got it. Was he winded afterwards?
Good follow-up question.
I would want to know, you know, did the cardio work?
I took enough boxing lessons that I'm comfortable and confident saying that if we did a like a charity radio station boxing event, I'm relatively confident of everyone in this building, I win. Not because I'm like bigger, stronger, faster than everybody in the building, but just I've got the background that I assume very few people else in the building have. I get it from XL. If that was a bleed over, I get it. He laughed. He said, no, that's not it. But they said, did that kind of kick in? And he's like, maybe. I mean, you could say that. I guess it did a little bit. And then he laughed at it. And I got to tell you, I really want to be mad at the guy, but I'm having a hard time doing it. I'm kind of in a wife tickling my feet spot. I'm like, dang it. It's a good thing. I think you're adorable. Because I think XL's adorable.
Yeah, it's still preseason. If it's regular season, it might be different.
That's also fair. If that's week one and they're down seven, I'm probably in a very different spot. All right, let's take a break. When we come back here in just a moment from right now, let's talk a little more college football. LSU Clemson's very interesting to me, not just because of the game itself, but because I think there is a very good chance that one of those two fan bases is going to be in absolute meltdown mode by two Sundays from now. Let's talk about the impact of that game on you, the fans, when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show, back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob, Lonzo, and you. Clemson and South Carolina are both inside of the top 13 in the AP top 25 poll, but it is the Tigers of Clemson that have the more consequential week one opener. That's not entirely true, actually. I think South Carolina's is probably more consequential as a loss for the Clemson Tigers or LSU Tigers. A loss for those teams in no way, shape, or form eliminates from the playoffs either as conference champions or as an at-large team. It does make it a little bit more difficult to get there, but it absolutely is a possibility that they could. It will make it more difficult, but as has been mentioned a few times on the show, as one of those that I understand why so many of you want the preseason poll done away with. I'm not even saying you're wrong or that I disagree with you. I don't. I'm saying that they're not going to get rid of it because it makes some televised games sexier. And when you get a top six matchup right out the gate like Clemson and LSU, that's a very sexy matchup. The other thing that it does is for schools that catch a higher ranking like Clemson and LSU, it takes a game like this. And I'm not saying it makes it non-consequential. I'm saying it makes it less consequential because while you will drop, we talked about this one earlier in the show as well, realistically speaking, when it's all said and done, the loser of that game between number 4 Clemson and number 9 LSU, if Clemson drops that game, I suspect they'll drop down to be like number 8, 9, 10. I would suspect that they will drop to be, just based on the point totals accumulated, Clemson with 1,398 points and 4 first place votes would likely, I would assume, slide down to around number 9, right ahead of Miami, who has 889 points. I would guess there's about a 500-point penalty for which one of these teams loses. If LSU at number 9 with 1,100 points was to lose, I'm going to guess they would slide somewhere around 15-16, where we find Florida and SMU. I could make an argument that LSU might stay at like 12-13 in the mix with South Carolina and Michigan, but no need to dwell on the hypothetical. Here's what I am very interested in. Whichever team loses that game on the opening Saturday of college football, a game that kicks off at 7:30 and therefore will end somewhere between 11:30 p.m. and midnight, I'm going to tell you exactly what Rob Brown's going to do that night. What Rob Brown's going to do is he's going to go find whatever game is the latest late night start that day. Colorado State at Washington at 11 o'clock. Utah, UCLA, 11 o'clock. Hawaii at Arizona, 10:30. Cal at Oregon State, 10:30. Idaho, Washington State at 10 o'clock. Or maybe the mighty whatever they are of Northern Arizona taking on number 11 Arizona State. By the way, because I went and looked as I was saying that, the Northern Arizona University Lumberjacks.
Yes.
You had better bet your Rudy Patootie. Your boy's headed right now to the Northern Arizona University merch shop because I want nothing more than to find out, do they have any team-branded flannel? Because if I can get a flannel shirt with Lumberjacks across the back, your boy's all in. Also, I want to see what their Lumberjack mascot looks like. Put all that to bed. We'll come back to the Lumberjacks later on in the show. The point here is, that night, I'm going to go find whichever one of those late-night games is the most intriguing to me. I'm going to put it on the big screen. I'm going to take the other five of them. I'm going to put them on the other assorted televisions and computers and tablets around the Bro Cave. I'm going to pour myself a nice bottle, a solid-sized glass of Angel's Envy or Four Roses, whichever I decide on as my bourbon o' choice for a late-night schadenfreude. And I am going immediately to every message board of the team, of the school that loses that game, Clemson or LSU. Because assuming that one of those two teams in week one, which is very likely, I would feel different about what I'm about to say if this was a week seven game. But it is very possible that with these two offenses both being heavily predicated on their quarterback and on the passing game, if one of these two teams loses the game because they A, shoot themselves in the foot, or B, more likely for LSU than Clemson, but coaches themselves out of a win, the meltdown is going to be absolutely iconic.
You're going to want some Lumberjack merch. Trust me.
Is it good?
Oh, they even have pillows.
Hell yeah. He is a
manly Lumberjack.
Hell yeah.
And he looks like an axe murderer.
Gonna love it. I'm all in on a great mascot. I'm going to go check out the NAU merch store here in a minute. The meltdown between the fans of the losing team is going to be absolutely iconic because this is not a normal year for either one of these teams. We've talked about this at length. I'm not going to spend all the time in the world on the details here, but if you look at the Louisiana State University Fighting Tigers, you were looking at a head coach that I believe, although in some sound I may get to a little bit later on in the show, Peter Burns, friend of the show, buddy of the show, who joined us at SEC Media Days, Peter Burns said on the SEC Network, he does not for a second believe, regardless of the outcome of this season, that Brian Kelly's on the hot seat. I respectfully, because I love Peter Burns, I respectfully disagree with him entirely. I think Brian Kelly is on the hot seat for the hot seat right now. He's like the hot seat that is the hot seat for the hot seat. He's on the hot seat now to be on the hot seat next year. What happens this season is absolutely going to either push Brian Kelly onto or pull Brian Kelly off of the hot seat. And LSU is a team that has struggled mightily in week one games, dating back to when they lost to Florida State in New Orleans on that blocked extra point that Florida State walked them off on. Y'all, the Bayou Bengal fan base about imploded that night. That was a few years ago. I remember it vividly. I got a bunch of LSU family. They were texting me in the middle of the night like, yo, WTF was that? What are we doing? The meltdown for LSU fans would be, I think, hilarious. And of course, being LSU fans, absolutely bourbon-filled into the evening, so like, subscribe. But I would also make the argument, while I do not think the meltdown would be quite as dramatic amongst Clemson fans, I've got to assume, with the attitude that y'all have right now, and rightfully so, it's a very good team on paper, as we had Cruz pointed out earlier in the stream. Statistically speaking, on paper, one of the better Clemson classes since the last Natty. If you drop game one, especially if the offense looks wonky, maybe Garrett Riley misses some play calls, maybe they're just not the team you wanted them to be, whatever the case might be. If it looks a little wonky and you don't get it done, I got to imagine there's at least a little bit of a meltdown there as well. This game is not just impactful from the standpoint of two teams trying to open up the season with a dub, with a top 10 dub to solidify the resume should they fall into the spot of an at-large bid seeker. It is also two teams with narratives about them in week one. Narratives about them for the 2025 season that could be program impacting for years. If Dabo doesn't meet the referendum, awkward conversation time. If Brian Kelly doesn't get it done, awkward conversation and a huge payout to move on time. This game is not just consequential from the standpoint of two teams fighting for a spot in the college football playoff and a national championship. It is consequential in terms of what happens with head coaches moving into 2026. Give me thoughts on that. We'll talk more about the AP Poll Top 25 and more when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and ew.
I meant that one with violence for taking stuff away from me.
Ryan Reynolds posted a picture of the Avengers A, but with an anarchy symbol A on top of it. And obviously people have gotten into the discussions of what that means as we march ever closer to the debut of Avengers Doomsday summer of next year, I think that movie drops.
No, I believe it's November or December.
Was it this year?
No, of next year.
Oh, of next year. So yeah. Fall of next year. I don't care if Deadpool's in it for like a minute or a long time. I just need a payoff to the Thor crying
scene. Yeah, he's got to be in it for the Thor scene for sure.
All right, let's talk AP preseason top 25, the University of Texas, for the first time in school history, will open the season as the AP's preseason numero uno team. They are also the first team in AP poll, preseason poll history, to be number one and enter week one as an underdog. They are on the road at number three, Ohio State, ranked just behind their Big Ten rival, the Penn State Nittany Lions. Texas, a 2.5-point underdog, but as they are, on the road, that makes sense. You get 2.5 or 3 points by being at the crib, so that is just the home field advantage of the horse chestnuts coming into play. So the SEC holds spots number one and number five. The Big Ten, with Penn State and Ohio State, holds spots number two and number three. The ACC holds spot number four, one inside of the top five when you include the top 10. The Southeastern Conference also holds the number five position with Georgia, the number eight position with Alabama, and the number nine position with LSU. Independent Notre Dame is number six. The Big Ten has one more team in the mix with number seven, Oregon, and the ACC has one more team with number 10, Miami. It is not till number 11 that you find the first Big 12 team. That is Arizona State. Back to the Big Ten, we go for Illinois at number 12. SEC hanging on to spot number 13 with South Carolina, to the Big Ten for 14 with Michigan. The SEC has 15 with Florida. The ACC has 16 with SMU. So that is how the conferences align in our preseason top 25. Here is the question that I have for you. Who's too high? Who's too low? And you can base it on whatever rationale you want to base it on. We had a texter just mere moments ago shoot a very interesting question to the Hub City Spartanburger text line at 844-326-3663. You text your thoughts to that number, 844-326-3663. We will read them on the air. Texter said, just to get ahead of the 10 SEC teams ranked holy cow narrative, last season there were 9 SEC teams ranked in the preseason top 25. Of those 9, how many teams finished in the season ranked higher than in the preseason? Correct answer is 1, Tennessee. I actually went just because I was curious earlier in the day, and I pulled last year's preseason top 25 and last year's end of regular season, not conference championship weekend results, the end of the regular season, just because I was curious. Preseason, Georgia was number one. They could not finish higher than number one. They dropped all the way down to number five. Texas started off number four. They ended the regular season at number two, so they moved up. Alabama started at number five. Alabama finished 11. They dropped down. Ole Miss started six. Ole Miss finished 15. They dropped down. Preseason, LSU started at number 13. They wrapped up the year, if I recall correctly, unranked. I think they ended up with some votes, but they were unranked. Tennessee started at number 15. Tennessee ended at number 6, so they moved up. Oklahoma started at number 16. Oklahoma ended up unranked. Going down the rest of Texas A&M started at number 20. Texas A&M ended the year as number 26, the first unranked team, but the first team that would have gotten back in, and that was it for the SEC last year. Now, the difference to me, Texter, between last year and this year, Rob Brown has been, for the duration of his career, with the exception of this year, and I am asking for, from you, special treatment because of that. You can stack up the last, coming up on, 18 years of my career. And in the 18 years that I have been doing this, not only have I not been SEC guy, but quite the opposite. For 18 years, I have been the guy, and I felt like for many of them, though keep in mind, only five of them have I been broadcasting here in the beautiful upstate of South Carolina in SEC territory. But when I was broadcasting down in the Florida Panhandle, very much SEC territory. When I was broadcasting in Lower Alabama, very much SEC territory. When I was broadcasting in Louisiana, when I was broadcasting in the butthole of America, Jacksonville, Florida, when I was broadcasting across the deep South, I was squarely in SEC territory. And I was, it felt like, the only guy in the media who did not subscribe to the, well, the SEC is better than everybody else, we just beat each other up week in and week out narrative. Now, not everybody who is an SEC fan talks like that. All right, that's probably rude of me to do.
There's a good portion, though. I mean, there just is because of the region. It's not. It's, I mean, you correct. Know, it just is.
Where
is.
I was broadcasting, that was a very popular way to talk about the Southeastern Conference. And for years, 13 of them to be precise and exact, for years, I pushed back against the SEC narrative. Every year at the end of the year, I dove deep into non-conference matchups, not just records in them, but strength of non-conference matchups. Yeah, the SEC was, you know, 17-5 in non-conference games, but hey, of those 17, 14 of them were against teams that haven't been ranked in a decade. Let's look at games against top 25 teams. You went 4-3 or 2-5 or whatever against those. I was the guy who pushed back against that narrative for years, and that includes last year. Because no, even with Jackson Dart, who, by the way, looked like an absolute dude for the New York Giants, I think Jackson Dart might be starting early in this season for the G-Men. He looked sharp in preseason game number one. But even with Jackson Dart, there was no world that I believed that the Ole Miss running Rebels were a legitimate top 10 team. I didn't believe it. And I called it out before it started. And then you looked at Ole Miss, and they finished, what, 9-3 in the regular season? Not a bad year. But they weren't in that mix. And I looked at a team like LSU, and I went, I feel the same way this year. I don't trust Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly is not a dude, historically speaking, who gets the best out of his players at the times when he needs the best out of his players. And part of the reason I'm picking Clemson in week one. Because Dabo always gets the best out of his guys. He just had a couple of years where the best out of his guys wasn't on par with the best of the best football teams in America. This year it is. This is why Dabo and the Clemson Tigers are a legitimate national championship threat. Because on paper, they are as good as just about anybody else in the country. And you never have to worry if Dabo's going to get the best out of his guys in the biggest moments. I don't feel that way about Brian Kelly. I wasn't in on LSU last year. To be honest with you, I'm not in on LSU this year. I think there's probably three, maybe four losses waiting for the Bayou Bengals down the stretch. But in the 18 years I have been, in my anecdotal experience, one of the very few guys where I was broadcasting. That may or may not be true here in the upstate of South Carolina. But where I was broadcasting, where it was a whole lot of SEC fans and a few scattered Florida State fans, etc., I've been the guy who largely pushed back against the SEC is king and everybody else is fighting for our table scraps narrative. So I am asking for you to consider that fact when I tell you that. It's different this year. It's different this year. This conference this year is not just the deepest conference in college football. This conference this year, I've said it, I'll say it again, and I will stand on it. This conference this year is the deepest conference, I think, in the history of conferences. Now, I've been saying, the phrase I've been using, and not just on this show, but I said it last week when I filled in on BetMGM Tonight. I said it last Tuesday when I was guesting on multiple shows across that network. I said it on Saturday on nationally syndicated Infinity Sports Network with the sports machine Sean Levine. I have been on in the last 3 weeks since we returned from SEC and ACC Media Days. The phrase that I have been saying is, I think this is the deepest conference in the history of the Southeastern Conference. I would like to amend that statement. I think this is the deepest conference in the history of conferences in college football. And yes, I will fully acknowledge that there is a chunk of that that may be as a knee-jerk overreaction to the propaganda extravaganza that was the SEC Media Days over in Atlanta, Georgia. But here's what I've said. I think Alabama is a very good football team. Will Ty Simpson be the guy? I don't know. And I would like to go on and predicate that this all comes with a caveat. And it is not exclusive to the Southeastern Conference. I think that this is true across the overwhelming majority of college football. I think a lot of it is going to be dictated based on who's right and who's wrong about their quarterback. There are a few schools outside of the SEC and the Big Ten that have proven commodities at quarterback that make them very interesting wild cards. Dante Moore at Oregon, although he's not outside of the Big Ten, you get it. Avery Johnson at Kansas State, Sean Leavitt at Arizona State. These are guys that are proven commodities, proven performers, with winning pedigrees behind them that I think, because of the question marks about quarterback across the contenders, I think we'll have them themselves in the mix. But I think Alabama is national championship caliber. I think Florida with DJ Lagway, who I think will be more Lenora Sellers than anything else, is championship caliber. On the bottom end of that tier, but in it. Georgia is championship caliber. LSU, if Garrett Nussmeier is a Heisman Trophy finalist, championship caliber. Oklahoma, if Brent Venables has indeed, as all the folks out in Boomer Sooner country have said, he has figured it out. Oklahoma's scary. Ole Miss, I don't necessarily think they're championship caliber, but I think they're 9-3. South Carolina with Lenora Sellers, Heisman Trophy candidate, championship caliber. Tennessee Volunteers, got to figure out what the hell they are without Nico Iamaleava, but they're high right now on what they got. Texas A&M, championship caliber. Texas, championship caliber. Bringing up the rear, the Vanderbilt Commodores, who beat Auburn last year, who beat Alabama last year. and won some damn football games in the SEC. The worst team in the SEC grabbed themselves some wins last year. This is the deepest conference in the history of conferences. I have always been pushed back against the SEC rules and you all drools. Guy, I can't do it this year. I do think the conference this year...
Never heard that before.
I do think the conference this year is what all of the SEC fans have been saying it has been for the last handful of years. We will find out if I am right. We will also find out what's happening across the sports landscape with Lonzo Sports Flash.
Spanning all of the sports landscape. But the only thing anyone cares about, the Associated Press preseason top 25 dropped yesterday with the Texas Longhorns holding the top spot for the first time in school history. Texas checked in 5 points ahead of Penn State, the closest margin from first to second since 1998. Ohio State holds the third spot ahead of number 4 Clemson and number 5 Georgia. Notre Dame is 6, and Oregon is at 7. Alabama, LSU, and Miami round out the top 10. South Carolina checked in at 13. Two more Team USA Ryder Cup slots have been claimed. U.S. Open winner J.J. Spahn, who checked in second to Justin Rose in the FedEx St. Jude Championship, and two-time major winner Xander Schauffele will both join Scottie Scheffler when Team USA faces off with Team Europe next month. The Milwaukee Brewers won a 10th consecutive game for the second time this season, making them the first MLB team since 2019 with multiple winning streaks of at least 10 games, and that is really good.